Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for people who play with needles and people who love people who love people who love people who play with needles.
Wow, that was masterful.
Thank you. And our guest this week, returning to us, Arlene Cohen. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine. It's so great to be back with you guys. It's like talking with friends.
There we go. Last time it was just me and you because Christine was sick, so had to have you back so we could talk to Christine. So that's a good thing.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm excited. I have to tell you guys that most of the time in the last number of weeks I've been listening to you in car rides, and I swear I want to like take notes or things that I want to like. either look up or comment back to you. And let's just say driving in a car is not the best time to be taking notes.
So no.
I keep that all the time.
This. Yes.
I have that same feeling of, right, you want to write something down and then you want to pull over to the side of the road because somebody says something that sounds like a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There needs to be a note function, like a button on the steering wheel. Take a note.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. But really, you guys are like my companions a lot of the time. And I thank you for having me back and having this opportunity to talk stitching and talk about everything, because I love the world of people that are out there who are interested in all kinds of things. And that's what I've just loved about your shows, is that you've been really covering the whole world of from cross stitch to canvas work to hand painted canvas to stores to designers to stitchers like me. So I truly love what you all have contributed to the stitching world that's out there. And I think it's just wonderful. And I know so many people that have so appreciated it. So thank you. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think it's, I would love to take credit for a thoughtful treatment of the breadth of needlework, but I think it's just that we're highly distractible and that we're just very, I think really what it is that we're both, well, like little children. Well, okay. Gary's a lot more disciplined than I am. With me, it's like, wow, that looks really cool. I want to do that now. So I start one thing and to my credit though, I haven't started something and then dropped it and moved on to another thing. So I'm working on 17,000 things, but every one of them is interesting to me. So we bring in somebody else that is doing that other thing. So it's not that we're, you know, we do all these things because they really are that interesting to us.
Absolutely. Yep. I think some of the people, I mean, some stitchers out there find what they love and they stick to that one thing, whether it be, you know, hand painted canvas or cross stitch or whatever. And that's wonderful. But I know for me as a stitcher, it was jumping from the world of cross stitch to counted canvas work. And for the first time I saw, I didn't even know the right term, but it was a counted canvas work, you know, done on canvas pattern. I was like, oh my God, what a different thing this is. Mm-hmm. I gotta try this out. And just what an eye-opening experience that was. And for me, it led to the opening of all these other worlds. And for some people, it's not what they're interested in. But for me, it was just so enjoyable to discover so much more that you can do with needle and thread. Right. There's a lot out there.
Well, that's what I think we talked about this a little bit the last time, Arlene. That's just one of the cool things about this whole needlework world is you really can't run out of things to try. And if you get bored, there are at least six other things that are related and that will use the skills that you have. Mm-hmm. That you can try and see if you like better. And then it seems like there's always somebody coming along with another twist that, you get tired of stitching thread, throw in some beads, you know, and this is kind of unique, I think, this hobby in a lot of ways, in that it just allows you to do that and to go off and experiment. And, if you don't like it, so what? You're not really out that much, a little time. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you do, you learn. So,
yep, right. Absolutely. Yep. So definitely. And even like learning about the different types of materials that are out there, whether it be, you know, making the leap from DMC floss that you bought at the big box craft stores and all of a sudden realizing there are other kinds of threads out there. There are other kinds mm-hmm. of cotton threads. And then there's people who stitch with silk, and how does that feel different? How does it look different? And then you bring in the world of metallics, and then you bring in the world of the specialty fibers. And I was listening to your really interesting interview with Doug Krynick, who, I mean, I just think that is an amazing story of a company, of a family business, and how that has evolved over the years. But just the creativity involved in what they do, in thinking about, hey, what can we use this machine to make? And then seeing it happen. And then you see even different ways people will use different fibers in different ways that you might never have thought of before. I just, that there's so much possibilities that that I just love. And then when you think you're going, like for me, you know, loving the world of all the different fibers and everything, and then getting, so one of the things I definitely wanted to talk to you, Christine, about is a book, because I guess it might have been one of your recent midweek shows, and you were talking about some surface embroidery, I guess, or some one of your embroidery projects that you're trying, playing around with, and the whole concept of like an outline stitch, and then mm-hmm. doing the short long stitches over it and everything. So so there's I mentioned this on a video quite some time ago. I have a book called Needle Painting Embroidery: Fresh Ideas for Beginners by Trish Burr. And I highly recommend this book to you. Because where I'm going with my story is that the projects in there just use DMC floss. And they are stunningly beautiful, and the directions are written out so clearly. And I learned, I have her book. I'm pretty sure this is reaching to pull it off the shelf right now. So I have an earlier book of hers, Crewel and Surface Embroidery, Inspirational Floral Designs. And this was a case of, so Gary, you asked me when I buy books, is it for using or for collecting? And the answer is a little bit of both. I know I purchased the first book thanks to a Mary Corbett. That's Mary Corbett with one T, by the way.
Yes, that's how you spell that. It's C-O-R-B-E-T, not T-T. Yes, thank you for clarifying. Yes.
So I know I first heard about Trish Burr through, I mean, because I've been following Mary Corbett's blog for years. And I know I first heard about Trish Burr from Mary Corbett. And I think I purchased this first book because of her, I think. Anyway, a few years ago, I was very lucky to go to one of the Nordic Needle retreats that they had. And I loved the way they set up, at least that year, that layout of the retreats and the classes, in that there were these probably 2.5-3 hour time classes. And it wasn't like you could finish a project during that time, but for me, it was like the introduction to a technique kind of project. And one of the classes was needle painting. And what you got was this book, some DMC floss, and some white cotton fabric that was literally bought at the Joann's down the street. You know, nothing fancy. And it was like a smack on the head that you can start a new technique without fancy things. And this was a book that actually like walked you through how to start the new technique. And especially even the commentary when they said, you know, we're all asking, okay, where this, you know, what kind of special fabric? Cause it wasn't a counted, you know, like a linen fabric that you would buy for like cross stitch or something like that. It didn't have holes. It was a cotton fabric, and we're all expecting, you know, some fancy fabric or something. No, we bought it. It's cotton fabric from Joann's.
Right.
Totally. This is what you do when you're learning something. So it was, and I just remember that particular class from the retreat when I just thought, you know, sometimes going back to your roots, DMC floss and some basic ideas and you can just make such beautiful things. But so this is a book that you might really want to look into because I did the project that was started from the retreat was like the first one, the beginner level flower. And I just felt like learning needle painting was totally doable following this book. Like just, it felt so simple. The pictures, like every step has a picture. It's not just a diagram, it's a picture of it. And, you know, you asked me, Gary, in the list of things we could potentially be talking about, you know, what's up next? What do you want to be stitching? Well, one of the things on my forever list is I want to come back and do more of this work because it's so beautiful. And I feel like having a guide like this makes it possible. I don't feel like I could do this work freehand. I feel like I would need a lot of projects under my belt to kind of be able to do it freehand or be able to
practice, right?
Exactly. Practice.
I will tell you a funny story. So I had posted, so the whole needle painting question had come about because I was working from a Jane Nicholas book and just kind of noodling around with needle painting because it was interesting to me and I wanted to see because it looked really hard and I didn't think I could do it. Because needle point on a canvas is very structured and everything. And this was the exact opposite of that. So, the thing that had puzzled me was the way that I had understood Jane Nicholas's instructions was you stitch the outline and then you started stitching inside the outline. That was the way it looked to me. And then I had picked up this other book and the way that book had done it was you stitched over the outline. And so I had two conflicting opinions and it seemed like the second way made more sense and was neater. But I wasn't sure because here are two experts saying the exact opposite thing. So I had posted the question online and everyone said, no, 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 it's definitely the second one. Well, the book is the Trish Bird book. So I have that exact book and you're exactly right. It is a brilliant, brilliant book for exactly all the reasons that you said. The needle painting that she does in there, it's simple flowers, but it's exquisite. The flowers come out like watercolors. They're just mm-hmm. absolutely beautifully done. And the way that she explains it, is so easy to understand, mm-hmm. the way she blends colors together that it makes it so for somebody that's not an artist, it makes it easy to understand how she gets, areas of threads to blend evenly without looking like, you know, blocks of colors that were put together with crayons by a 4-year-old, which is what it would have ended up if I had done it otherwise. Mm-hmm. So yes. That has been when I was working on a crewel work project that had some needle painting in it. And I don't know if you would call it needle painting if it's in crewel. I don't know the terminology, but it's the same idea where it was a rabbit and it's blending different shades of brown into this rabbit just to get some dimension to it, but it's exactly the same idea. And so I just used the same technique where she kind of divides an area into threes, and then stitches over, you know, from one area of the three into the other area of the three. And it just made it so much easier mm-hmm. to mentally divide it that way. Mm-hmm. So yes, I completely agree. The Trish Burr, they're just brilliant. And then you can take that idea and then transfer. So basically, like you said, using it as a technique book. And then if you see another design, you can use those techniques to yes. stitch those designs. So that those designs are no longer intimidating because you know the technique to get those effects.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's kind of how I feel about that. So yeah, I think it's phenomenal. One of the easiest to understand books for one of the most difficult to execute techniques that I've found so far.
Yes, yes. I think there's some, you know, it's interesting when it comes to seminars and classes and you hear about, you know, 4-day classes and 3-day classes and so on. And there's surely lots to be gotten from those experiences. And for me, I've never really had too much opportunity to do those kinds of things. The things that I have been able to do in a 3-hour opportunity have been wonderful. And something like this, where you just need those few hours to start off, and then you play, and you can really play a lot on your own if that's absolutely. So, it's a great book. And, she has also, I don't know if you've seen her Color Confidence in Embroidery book.
No.
I'm just looking here quickly. So there are some projects in here. Yes. It's sort of like the next level. I found it really interesting for some of its like color theory pieces. Because she also, in all of the color talk she's giving, she's also like giving you all the DMC like conversions to what she's talking about. So like harmonizing color schemes or design color schemes or like all this color information that she's talking about for lights and shadows, all her examples, she's also giving you these DMC numbers. So it's not just a color theory book. It's a color theory book for embroidery because you could talk about it in our language. And our language is DMC numbers, if that makes sense. Which is just like just another little step in the whole, you know, learning process. I know I've done some basic learning and reading and things about color theory. I know a color wheel. I know some terms, but I also know a lot of the time I just rely on what my eye likes, you know, and I know that that's become so personal from one person to another, but there are times where it's really helpful to have a book like this one to just, I know a main color. I know what a color wheel tells me is, you know, the triad or the complement or split complement or whatever. Well, what are some other things that I could work with? And it's a book like this that could get you going in that level of design stuff. So that's another one of her. You guys should try getting her on. See if you could have a good conversation with her, because I bet she would have some really good things to say. That's my little Trish Burr book right there.
Well, I've written to her several times and have not heard from her, so maybe she'll hear this and join us, because I followed her for some time, and I find what she does to be fascinating. I love her white work with color designs, where she just puts little bits of color in to a white work thing. I think she's just incredibly creative, and everything that I've read from her, I do not own one of her books, but everything I've read, you just feel that it's approachable. Everything she does is approachable and well explained. And so I'm glad to hear from both of you that even needle painting is explained, because those little bird things that she has, those little bird designs, I mean, they're incredibly realistic. It's really amazing what she does with just some thread and just some basic blending. And the way I've seen her, you know, what her blog writings and things, it just seems like it really isn't that tough. It looks really intimidating. I mean, I'm with you, Christine. It's one of those things where I feel like I'd have to practice for months before I got anything that looked decent. But she makes it sound like it's really not that big of a deal. So I don't know, but I guess I need to get a book or two and take a run at it. So
yeah, it's still difficult. Don't get me wrong. It's not. It's not the kind of thing that it takes practice. And I think it's one of those things where it's easy to get started. And it takes years to get really, really good at it because, so for example, I think like, if you think of a flower petal, right? And where just think of a rose, the way a rose goes together, to get a rose down where you fade a flower petal from the dark at the edge of the petal to the light on the inside, to get that to work, you could probably do it fairly competently, fairly quickly. But to get it to work in the exact way that a flower would be done naturally, so that it would be, so that there's some verisimilitude there, so that you'd look at it and say, yes, that looks exactly like the rose in my garden, to the point where it wouldn't look unnatural and catch your eye as unnatural, that level of competency, that's where I think it takes years, or it takes an incredible artistic aptitude. That's the part I think that is the tough part. And so one thing that I learned, so I'm taking an online Celeste Chalsani class in Stump Work. And one of the things that she had written, which I thought was one of the greatest ideas, and I would never have thought of this, was she was talking about, actually it wasn't even, I don't think it was part of the class. It might have been something on her website or something like that. She was talking about, stitching flowers. And what she had said was this: when you're designing a flower, the way she goes about doing it is first she photographs the flower. So let's take something simple like, a daisy. Okay. So first she takes pictures of the flowers from all different angles, as many as she can, and then she takes it from the angle that she would like to stitch it. And then she picks the flower and she traces all of the petals of the flower so that she has the size and the shape. So, and she tries to do that quickly because they start to kind of shrink up pretty quickly. And she photographs them then too, because that way what she's getting is the size and shape and proportion, but also in that moment, especially, you know, and it depends on the light at the time of day, can change things as well. You can see how and where the color starts to fade from dark to light, and how the petals change, because the shadow of one petal over another is going to change it. So getting that photography and getting that reference material would help a tremendous amount. So I thought that was a really good tip, mm-hmm. because that way you're not just kind of imagining it out of your head. Because if you're an artist, you can kind of do that because you think about what something should look like or you know, what is artistically beautiful. For me, that's not a natural thing to do. So mm-hmm. I would have to look at something and say, this is pretty. This is what nature looks like. And now I can see how it should look and then use that as a guide. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a pretty cool, way of approaching, designing something that is from nature.
Mm-hmm. Now, Christine, I'm interested because you've gone from the Debbie Rowley counted canvas book.
Yeah, I'm all over the place.
And needle painting and whatever else you have going on. And so what are you discovering in terms of the different enjoyment between being quote on the grid and off the grid?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, because those mm-hmm. are very different worlds.
Totally. They're totally different. What am I discovering? I think I like a lot of different things and I like them for different reasons. And I probably have, a little bit of dissociative identity disorder. So this is how it works for me. It really depends on what I need at that moment, right? Mm. So if I'm in a mood where I'm sitting watching a really cool TV show and I'm just fidgety, then I'll pick up a cross stitch that's got a really large canvas count mm-hmm. that is a counted piece that I don't have to pay a whole lot of attention to, but happened to be a design that I liked. So is really not any challenge. But I'm just stitching up and it gives my fingers something to do. Because there are some pieces that you stitch because they aren't necessarily a challenge, but you happen to like the piece, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's that. And there's a crewel piece that I'm doing because it's a Jacobean style a little bit. And it's a whole bunch of stitches I haven't done. So, but it's on fabric. So it's off the grid a little bit. So I enjoy that piece because it's not that difficult. And then the stump work, I picked up because originally, that whole thing started because we were talking to the Nordic Needle people and they had a book that was a Jane Nicholas book, which was, The Flowers of Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And so the whole historical aspect of it kind of grabbed my attention. So that sort of took me on this journey of historical needlework, right? And so the appeal to that is I love the history of it, and I love researching, not so much. So you can go the sampler route of, you know, what needlework women were doing at the time from a sampler perspective. But for me, I've done costume design and clothing sewing, you know, making clothing. So it was interesting to me, okay, what was the clothing that the aristocracy was wearing at the time? What was the clothing that was used in the theater at the time? What did it look like? What was the embroidery that was used? So, and it was Jacobean. It was, you know, gardens were becoming popular at the time. So floral embroidery was interesting. So, okay, well, what does that look like and how can I make that? Mm-hmm. So then I started picking that up and just kind of noodling with it. So, and really I'm just on the cusp of that and started with it and said, you know, this is something where, somebody walking me through it would be a little bit beneficial. And what do I think about it? That I enjoy from a research perspective, sort of learning about the history of it. And I do like being off the grid a little bit. Because it's hard.
Yeah.
It requires a lot of discipline, and different kind of discipline. So, canvas work requires discipline in technique. You're sitting with a laying tool and you're making sure that every thread is, you know, laid exactly properly with the right tension. This, you're making sure your needle is going in exactly the right place, and it's less about, you know, the right tension, and it's more about you have to choose exactly where your needle is going to make sure that your satin stitch is exactly perfect. Or you're choosing where your needle is going to go to create the right blend. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot, it's a lot more subjective.
Yes.
So that's kind of interesting. And I like the idea that it's a little frightening, and frightening is kind of a weird word to use because, needlepoint, I know that if I work at it long enough, I will reach a point where I will be good at it, because really it's just a matter of doing it and doing it and doing it, you know, and if I do it enough, and I concentrate, I will be able to do it well. The fear of it is entirely possible that I can work for 30 years and be terrible at it still.
Yes. Right?
Because it does require some innate aptitude, right?
Yeah. Well,
so
yeah.
There's a little bit of that edge of like, I could really try at this and really never get good at it at all. And I kind of like that. I like that idea that I don't know if I will ever be good at this. And so I don't know how it's going to end. Right.
Well, you know, the next level to take that kind of exploration is with Japanese embroidery. Have you looked into that at all?
I'm trying not to, because I know what's going to happen. I've seen some classes and it's absolutely stunning. And so I'm intentionally looking away, because that and gold work are both really beautiful, and I need to look away, because otherwise I'm going to be spread too thin and I won't be able to, then I'll never know if I can be good at anything, because I'll not be investing in anything. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I learned about Japanese embroidery So what I discovered about myself is that I'm not really a happy stitcher when I'm off the grid. You know, I've tried different things, and some of it is what you're saying, that I don't know if I would ever get to that level of perfection. And then it's also, if I'm not enjoying it that much, I don't want to spend that much time. And also what I think I could also say is that some of that side is actually covered through my lace work, that while there is still some grids and some depending on what kind of lace I'm doing. Some bobbin lace, there are those make decisions on how it looks depending on what tension and what thread and so on. So I guess I'm sort of covering myself with my bobbin lace in that direction. But overall, with my needlework, I realized I like the grid more. But there was a period of time that I was looking into Japanese embroidery because I thought it was so beautiful. And I just thought, I want to see what this is all about. And what I learned is that, or at least what I think I've learned, is that it's so, like, it's hard to just take a 3-hour class and just get a little taste of it to decide if you want to go further. You have to, like, make a commitment that you want to really do it. They, you know, they want you to invest in a real frame and the real materials. And my God, the beauty that could come from it and the whole 10 phases and the Japanese Embroidery Center down in Atlanta. And I mean, there's beautiful, beautiful things, but it seems like the people who do Japanese embroidery are wholeheartedly committed to that as an art. And I think there's so many wonderful things that you could choose to do with needle and thread. And if you are enjoying your testing out the waters of different directions, keep on testing, you know?
It's that, and to be honest, I think the other element of it is it goes back to the aesthetic of what do you like, right? It's, you want to make something that you're going to want to have that's beautiful to you, right? And there's beauty in all of these things. The Debbie Rowley piece that I did, I absolutely love. I don't know how many pieces like that I would do before I would get tired of them. Mm-hmm. But these, they're sort of an endless openness to them. Mm-hmm. And there's something appealing about the aesthetic of this English embroidery style that just appeals to me so much that it makes me want to learn it, in ways that other types may not. And I think that's probably true of everybody. Everybody wants to make the thing that makes them happy to look at. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of what's driving me in this direction right now. And that could be different in 6 months. You know, I don't know. Or I could get to a point where I say, you know what, this is, I'm not having fun with it because I'm not enjoying it because it struggles. I'm struggling with it too much. And mm-hmm. I'm turning out pieces that are just mediocre because I really don't have an aptitude for it. And I don't want to make mediocre pieces for the rest of my life, so I'm going to turn to something that I can, you know, joyfully turn out something that I'm proud of. So who knows? But that's kind of the fun of this, is that I have no idea where it's going to go. And I'm perfectly happy there. So, you know, that's fine.
So I wanted to share with you infrastructure, because Gary asked about what I use and how I work. So
One of the things with your videos, we get to see your book collection and we get to see the stuff you do. We never get to see where you work. And I, with all the different things you do, I've just been really curious about what your workspace is like and what you do. And I mean, everybody has an innate curiosity about what tools other stitchers use, but I've really been curious about yours just cause you do such a variety of things.
Yeah, and that, you know, and a lot of people talk about, or either through comments or what have you, feedback that I get about the variety of stuff that I do. And some of that comes from, you know, the world of FlossTube videos as I have found them. There are lots of cross-stitchers, and that's what the video, that world was founded on. And it's wonderful. It's a great community. I love that community. And so I am a little unusual in the FlossTube world because I do show such a variety, but it's really a reflection of who I am as a stitcher, and just how I like to try out different things. Where I'm sitting right now is exactly where I do my videos. I have like a loft space, and I refer to it to myself as a loft, but it really is like a studio space. But that said, I don't stitch up here. Or if I'm stitching up here, it's some very specific reason why I have to be sitting here at a table. This is where I do my bobbin lace, because I need to sit at a table doing bobbin lace. So like where you see me on my videos is exactly where I am when I'm working on lace. Where I stitch is downstairs on the couch, on the side of the couch, and I use a stand. I have used, I'm trying to think, like I was trying to like date this. I've lived where I live right now, since 2008, and I know the stand that I have right now, I had for probably a good 4 or 5 years before I moved here. And before that, it was, I'm trying to think back, because I certainly was stitching before that. And before that, I was probably using, hoops and, no. Well, there was a period of time for quite some time I was using the cheap wooden kind of stand that you could get at a Michael's, you know, that basic, simple, put together stand. And I used that for a few years. It served my purpose. I am a very practical kind of person. I don't feel the need to upgrade my life, whether it be the newest gadget, the newest technology, or even the newest floor stand. If something's working for me, I use it. And so I had this, you know, wooden thing that I got from Michael's that I used for years. And the scroll frames I used for that period of time were probably the kind of things you got at a Michael's or a Joann's, where I think I probably had to stitch on to the ends. Maybe something like that. I forget how those were, how you had, like, so scroll frames, scroll frame where you had, you know, you rolled up your fabric, like linen fabric, and you had to somehow attach it on the end. I don't think those, I stapled.
You mean the canvas tape thing that you would baste it on?
Yeah, I think something like that. Yeah. I can't even think that, like, in my mind, the cheap kind that you can buy at the big box stores. So somewhere along the line, I just decided, and it might have been influenced by the local needlework store that I had. I really liked it was a husband and wife that ran it. The wife was just so supportive of me at a stitcher. And at some point she might have asked me what I used, and I told her, and she basically said, "You need to upgrade," kind of thing. I was trying to think really hard how I came to what I used, and it literally might have been an internet website, web search, a Google search. It might have been she suggested it. I honestly don't remember. But I ordered, it was like a big deal purchase for me that, you know what, I'm going high here. So I had to look this up because I knew it had something like a deer, but it wasn't deer. It was gazelle. So it's artisandesign.com. The company is still around. So like I said, this stand I have been using for, what, 2008 plus 4 years beyond that. I mean, good number of years I've been using this stand. And the company, it seems like a small family-run business that makes these. You know, on their website, they also make scroll frames that have a really great way to, like, you don't need to, baste in. They have this, like, locking system with this little piece of wood that you just put your end of the fabric in, and then you put the extra little piece of wood, and then you roll it, and it's tight. I mean, it has worked for me for years. So I bought the stand, I bought the little tool tray, I bought the, you know, chart magazine holder, and then I bought the scroll frames. I think there was like three different sizes, like a multi-pack. And that was like one of the best gifts I gave to myself, because I have used that system for years. So I sit on the end of my couch. Again, the old place where I lived, where I sat on the end of the couch, was right underneath an overhead light. So that was direct light, which is fine. But when I moved here, it was, you know, one of my first purchases here was, okay, time for me to get an Ott light. So I just got, I use an Ott light, floor stand Ott light when I'm stitching down there. And I'm usually sitting cross-legged on the couch for a period of time. And then eventually my legs kind of wander in other directions. When I was doing the big, the 40 count silk gauze piece that was at A&G, the one that won the ribbons, that was the first time. Oh, and when I need to use a magnifier, like when I'm doing a silk gauze or something on particularly small count, you know, I've tried a few things over the years and have basically ended up finding them. What I've relied on is a clip-on magnifier that I clip on to part of my stand. It actually clips on to where sort of the side of where the pattern can be held. And it just works well. I've tried separate floor magnifiers. I've never been able to get them at the right height, the right level, the right whatever. That actually the Otlite that I purchased came with one of those magnifiers that you could also put on it. I've never used it. It just doesn't work in the setup that I have. When I was doing the big 40 count silk gauze, that was the only time that I ever had a problem that it wasn't quite shadows. It was a little bit of shadows, that I couldn't get a good enough sight of what I was doing. So I did actually go out and get a second light so I had two lights on me. So I had light on either side plus the magnifier. And that's how I worked with those, to do that big silk gauze piece. And cause that's the only piece I've ever had that I've really felt the need for more light in what I was doing. So that's my stitching setup is really on the couch downstairs, facing the television. I might be listening to television much more than I would say I'm watching television. And you know, it's the comfort zone of being there. It's, Christine, you said this again, I think it was last week's midweek show, but they all mushed together to me. But one of the recent midweek shows, you were talking about that, that power. And I've known this for years. It's that when I'm stitching and it calms me down and there's such power to that and it's needed. And when I can't do it for whatever reason in an evening or something, I feel it. It's not a good evening. There are times where I know I should be going to bed, but I will, try to just put in one strand or one whatever. And then, of course, the problem with that is that one strand is not enough. I want to do more. Because, what I say to lots of people, everyone has their thing, whether it be meditation or gardening or playing with their kids or whatever it is that gives you what you need. And for me, it's stitching. It's putting in needle and thread through fabric, through canvas. It's doing that creative process. And on whatever level, whether I'm following someone else's pattern, whether I'm designing something myself, there is something about that just makes such a difference and it's needed. And so the setup that I have just works so well for me. Every so often on one of the Facebook groups, like particularly on Needlepoint Nation, there's always someone who's every so often posts, hey, give me your suggestion for stands. And I see what people are using nowadays. And I'm like, you know what? Mine works so well. There's no reason to even look at something different. There was about 2 or 3 years ago, the clamp. So it's got a side clamp, which clamps to the scroll frames, but I also have these little, you need to kind of look at the website to see what I'm talking about, but these little wood pieces that I attach to it so that when I'm working with stretcher bars, so I'll use, and I don't use fancy stretcher bars. They're Evertights, which are what I refer to as the fancy stretcher bars. And for some people, they swear by them. And great. I have the cheap stretcher bars. but because those are flat, 90 degree angle flat things, whereas the scroll frame sides that I have are an angled thing. So the clamp is made to hold those angled thing. The clamp also works very well with Q-snaps. But then if you need to put in a flat thing like stretcher bars, you just attach these little wood things with like a rubber band kind of thing, and boom, the stretcher bars stay in there perfectly well as well. So it's a great system, and it's worked for me for years. And then it was just like 2 or 3 years ago, the clamp I noticed started to have a little crack, and then the crack got bigger, and all of a sudden I realized it broke. And I'm like, I mean, I didn't use duct tape, but it was like rubber bands and all kinds of stuff to hold the thing together. And I had pretty much convinced myself, all right, I think it was like a mom and pop shop. There's no way they could still be in business, but yet I had to like figure out the name of this thing. Yes, the website was still there, and yes, they were still in business, and yes, I could buy a new clamp. So I was a happy camper that I could still keep on using what I had. So I highly recommend it for anyone who's on the lookout for a floor stand or needing, or the scroll frames. I mean, the way that this system works, I get a really decently tight, when I'm working on like a linen fabric or cotton or whatever, you know, even weave of any kind, I've had no problems with tension. It's exactly what, because of the way you tighten it. It's just a great system. So it works well for me. I like it.
But isn't that, that's how it works though. Especially in this hobby, once you find a tool, whatever it is that works for you and that you like and is durable, then you don't even bother looking for the latest and greatest. It's just, this is what I'm comfortable with. This performs. And if something breaks, it's not, well, I guess I'll buy a new stand. It's how can I fix this or how can I replace it so I don't have to buy a new stand because I don't want to because I like this one.
Absolutely.
And I got to believe if we surveyed 100 embroiderers, they have one hoop that, you know, is their hoop that they've used forever. And, uh-huh. And, you know, and they're not giving it up. They bought a good hoop and they're not giving it up. And I think that happens a lot. And even if somebody comes to you and says, hey, look how great this is and look what this will do and what this, you know, it does this and it has this flexibility. Your mind just says, I don't care. Mine works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So there you go, Christine. She's on the couch just like you. Yep.
Yes. So I was going to ask you, how does that work with, because I know some of the stands, have a leg that points towards you for stability. So if you have a chair that has like a recliner that has a footstool or the couch that goes all the way to the floor, it doesn't really work that well. So how does yours work?
So it's so funny that you asked that. So, because I was trying to poke around and make sure I had the name correct when we were talking, I was on their website. So they actually have the one I own is called a Gazelle. They have a second floor stand that the leg is different. So mine, when I swing it toward me, like I swing it away when I'm getting up for the night, but when I swing it toward me, when I'm sitting and working, there is one leg that actually goes under the couch. And the other is like perpendicular to it, but they have a different floor stand that does not require a leg to go under a couch or a seating. So, because if you have a, you know, chair or whatever that would not allow you to put something under the couch, I forget what they call their other stand, but basically they've made the bottom different so that you don't need that. But it reminded me of when, so again, this is when I lived in my old place. And, so I already had the stand, but I was buying a new couch. And I remember being in the furniture store. I was in one of those big, you know, giant furniture stores. I had my certain requirements of just practicality. That's all it was. And one of the things was about, I need to get my floor stand, I need whatever it was, half an inch, 3/4 inch, probably not even that.
Right.
You know, okay. So I had my simple thing was if my hand could fit under it, I'd be good. So, you know, some salesman is trailing me around the store. I'm sitting on the couch, you know, every couch, I'm sitting on it, feeling it, and then I'm sticking my hand underneath it. And finally, the guy was asking, okay, I get the sitting part, but what are you doing with your hand? But then, here's what happened. The couch I picked out, they deliver it. The guy, you know, delivery people leave. And then I go to sit down. It's all comfortable and anything. I go to bring my needlework stand over, and it doesn't fit underneath it. Because I had misjudged the whole thickness of the carpet. I had this momentary, oh my God, what am I going to do? And my solution was, I'm going out to Home Depot right now and I'm figuring out what I'm going to do. And I just found simple little, like, blocks, like cedar wood blocks that are meant for like going in your closet or something, like little blocks that were like half an inch thick or something. And I put them under each leg of the couch and I was good to go. I just literally needed a little bit more room to make it fit. But that's my couch story of how to make the floor stand work. And actually, where I live right now, the carpet isn't an issue, so I don't even know what happened to those blocks. But so all this to say is that, yeah, you need to take into consideration whether you need something to go underneath a couch or your sitting chair, whatever. This particular company offers two stands, one, and you need to look at the bottom to decide what makes the most sense for you. That's the short version of it. So, yeah.
Cool.
All right, Christine. All right, well, there you go.
One more stand to look at between the Millennium, now this one.
Yep.
Yeah, see, and what do I have? The L's? What is it? Oh, I knew I'd forget. But the one I have has a flat metal plate. Mm-hmm. Oh, I hate when I forget that. And the way I'm set up, normally the plate would be toward you so that the weight of the stand would – of the needlework would make it lean on the plate, but the way I have mine set up, that doesn't work. So I had to turn the plate away from me, the foot plate. And so then I had this big piece of solid steel that I keep in the garage. Just if you got a hammer or something and you wanted a good hard surface to hammer it on, it weighs a ton. It's like a foot long and it weighs a ton. So that's my counterweight to keep that thing going. But yeah, now, see, I use, with my scroll frame, I have a separate stand for that because, the frame that, or the case creations, yeah, is the one I have. That one doesn't hold a scroll frame, properly. And so then I have a conventional wooden one that I modified and put arms on that my, scroll frame rests on. So that works for me. So I end up with two stands. But it's funny because right now I'm working on that stocking, and I'm using my scroll frame stand. But I took the arm out of the case creation one, the arm with the clamp. I just took that out because I still use the tray that holds my scissors and my laying tools and other things. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't give that up. It's right where I want it. So so I might, you know, take one apart to use the other. And I guess everybody has their way. Of doing it, yeah. So, yeah. So, what's your favorite laying tool? Always curious about that.
The only laying tool I use is the kind that is looks like a thimble with a bent needle sticking out of it.
Oh, trolley needle?
Trolley needle kind of thing.
Really? Okay. All right. Now I have one. I can't make it work. And I know Debbie Raleigh. That's all she uses. I can't make it work. Drives me nuts. So. What finger do you put it on?
So I put it on my pointer finger. I don't use my thumb. I put it on my pointer finger. And, I don't know what else to say. I put it on my pointer finger and that's the only place I've ever used it. It's always this conscious thing when I have it on so that I'm not like trying to scratch my nose or something when I have it on. Because things could get dangerous. But, and like the concept of trying to hold a laying tool has just, like, I don't think I've even tried it because when the concept was first introduced, and I can't even think when I learned about it or when or how, it was that idea that made the most sense to me. It was sort of like, why would I hold a tool when I could wear a tool? I guess is where my brain went. And so I picked one of these up at a show or some, I don't know where it was, where I was able to actually test it out. And I'm like, yeah, this works. I'm doing it. So I've never actually used a laying tool where I hold it. I've just always used one of those thimble kind. That's what I use.
Now see, I guess I got to try it. I never considered my index finger because I just always figured it would be in the way. And that's the thing with the trolley needle that I keep finding is no matter what I do, it's in my way. Huh. And so what works for me is just a conventional laying tool. And I don't even really know what I do with it with my hand. I don't even know how I hold it. It's not a conscious thing. Mm-hmm. It's just out of the way while I'm doing whatever. And then when I need it, then I have, you know, it's one of those things. I guess I should pay attention to what I do with it because it's always in my hand. I mean, I use it a lot, but, I really, now that I think about it, I don't know what I do with it, how I hold it. I don't know, but, that works for me. But now I always feel like the trolley, for this very reason you gave, the trolley needle makes a lot of sense because, yeah, why not wear it? Then you always know where it's at. And, but I just haven't been able to make it work. So now I got to try it now because I buy these things because it does look like it makes a lot of sense. And
The only time, like there are times where I'm using it and I could even tell you without sitting in front of doing something, where a certain direction gets very awkward, you know, whether it's being, I can't think whether it's going right or going left diagonally up, whatever, you know, sort of certainly horizontally and vertically perfectly fine. But there's a certain movement that when I'm at a certain angle or a certain whatever that can be a little awkward, but it's again, I've just gotten so used to it that it's just what I do. But now that you're saying this, it makes me wonder, well, what would it be if I had it more free flowing in my hand and I could change? I wouldn't have to adjust my whole finger to that angle. I would be adjusting the tool to the angle, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you know, thanks to you, I might try something different once and see what it feels like, you know,
It'll just mess because, you up.
it is, it's just what I've always used. It sits down there. The magazine or pattern holder thing has the little posts, you know, that you could hang, you know, loops of thread or something on it, but that it sits on one of those posts so that it's just always down there. So, absolutely.
Okay. It's just the little things. It's the little things. And now I've really been, just while you were talking, I'm thinking, what do I do with that laying tool? It's in my hand, but how do I got to pay attention to what I, because you know how that you have those things and you just don't think about them. And it's going to drive me nuts now because I'm not home right now. So when I get home, I got to see what I'm doing with my laying tool when I'm not actually using it. This will be interesting.
That's like any time you return back to something you haven't looked at in a while and you think, what did I do with this? Or how did I use this? Or how, you know. It's that pause of sort of natural rhythm of something you're just so used to, but then you haven't seen it in a while. It's like, huh, what is this for? What do I use it for? Absolutely. So.
Yep. So I've been thinking about you. Not, you haven't dominated my thoughts. Don't get me wrong there, but from time to time, because see, as a former teacher, I know what it's like to start a school year, and you know, I know what it's like to teach. It's all consuming. And you had a pretty good summer run where you really had some momentum going with your Etsy shop, Works by ABC, and your designs, and you were cranking out some designs, and you really had some good momentum going, and then the school year hits. And I know what happens. I mean, I've experienced it. I know exactly what happens. So how have you had to kind of force the design work and the stitching to keep it going, or how has that been for you? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so there's definitely been some challenges in the last few weeks that I'm hoping. Well, first of all, I have just loved the designing work that I've designed some of my own things for years, and last spring, late winter, spring, when I started just the idea, would anyone be interested if I kind of put myself out there? And then using the wonderful FlossTube community as a starting place of, here are some people that I'm getting to know who are getting to know me, that are seeing the things I do, and this is a place start spreading the word of what I do, and hey, maybe they would be interested in buying some of the things. You know, it's just such a, it has been such a great ride for me. I know that it's been just a little over 4 months since I first opened my Etsy store, and I know that because you can set up, like, Etsy will put up listings for 4 months and then they have to get renewed. And so I just went through some renewal process of my very first listings. So that's how I know, you know, what time period. And so I love this work. I've just been accumulating so many ideas, and it has been frustrating that's the only word to say it, that so many hours of my day in these last few weeks have been focused on a job. You know, teaching really does take up, you know, a good part of your body, mind, and soul. And I have been trying really hard. And there's also some new pieces of my teaching life this year. So there's been a little hump of a learning curve hump to kind of get through. And I'm hoping I'm past some of that learning curve stuff. I don't know why the number in my mind has been about seven. Each of the times I've put out new designs, it's been seven designs. And I'm in this place where I know exactly what I'm doing for my next set of designs. I have basically three of them done, and the other four are in different stages of work. And I'm trying every day to put in a little bit of time on one or the other. And the challenge is when that little bit of time is like a half hour as opposed to 4 hours, know, and that's just the reality. Or to have to choose, do I want to continue working on this for the next hour before I go to bed? Or am I going to stitch for the next hour before I go to bed? You know, that's what I've spent some of the past week or so making a decision like that. And that's where it's definitely been, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I just want more hours in the day. Because I so badly want to be spending more time just getting these ideas out, or even, yeah, simply put, getting these ideas out. I showed in a video, two videos, whatever it was, I was showing a little pin cushion that I made, a red and white pin cushion, and it was, I have it sitting right in front of me here. It was something I designed, and it was the inspiration came from seeing this amazing quilt exhibit in New York City in 2011. And it, you know, it was on my list of things to show on a FlossTube video when I get around to it. And that was a video. It was coming out for whatever reason. It was inspired that particular video. And I was literally holding it in my hand and I said out loud in the video, and it's mostly cross stitch. Like, it just occurred to me in that moment on the video, I'm like, I could turn this into a pattern. It had not occurred to me. I have all the graphs, which were done in pencil and paper. I have everything that I did to create this. And then so many people commented on that video. Any plans to turn that into a design kind of thing? I'm like, yes, absolutely. So this is a rare case where I actually have the finished product in my hand, and I just need to create the pattern that I can offer to sell, because this is something that people have said, wow, that was really cool. I would love to make that. And I just need to find the time to put it all together. And also, this is one of the things that I have loved and people have commented on, that most of my designs, there's a story that goes with them. There's something to be shared. And that's what I think is so interesting when it comes to needlework patterns, whether they be cross-stitch, counted canvas, whatever. When there's something interesting about the inspiration for a pattern. And so for all of mine that there is a story, I have shared that inspiration, and it's often been, you know, shared not only in a FlossTube video, but shared in the pattern that a person is getting. Because I love it when I've bought patterns that have told me about why, where it came from, what it was. And so this one has such a great story. I can tell about the quilt exhibit and what I did to create it. And, So, I mean, this is just an example of how it's like every day I am trying to do a little bit toward getting my next set of designs out. And it's just that those number of hours are just stretched out in more days than they were during the summer.
Right. Well, that's what, you know, whenever anybody talks about teaching and talks about summers off and, you know, all the holidays, and you're done in the middle of the afternoon, and my response to them always is, you have never taught, have you? And well, no. Okay, well then stop right there, because you don't know. You know, go to a high school ball game, and you can always find the teacher who's on supervision duty, because that teacher's sitting at the top of the bleachers with plenty of space and stacked papers all around them, grading quizzes or tests while doing supervision, because those are 2 or 3 hours in the day where that can be accomplished, because there's a lesson plan to write at night or preparation for the next day's classes or any number of things. And so then I think about you, and I can imagine you're just itching to design and itching to put these things out. And I know you can't get the time. I just know you can't. And you think, oh, the weekend's coming. Yeah, well, I got plans for classes next week, and I need to get that lined up. And at some point, I would like to sleep a little bit. And pretty soon it's Sunday night, and you're at it again. Yeah. So you have all my empathy. I'll tell you that.
Well, thank
Arlene,
you.
Arlene, what's your Etsy store?
So my Etsy store is Works by ABC. My initials are ABC. When I first started teaching, I had a book bag from like L.L. Bean or one of those places where you get embroidery. And so many people like made a comment, oh, how cute, your bag says ABC. And I'm like, nope, those are actually really my initials. It's not just a teacher thing. So Works by ABC. I have all my patterns. I offer both as PDF downloads as well as a paper pattern that I will mail out to you. And the feedback that I've gotten from that has just been so positive, because people like it both ways. And there aren't too many places on Etsy. You get lots of PDF options. There aren't too many places on Etsy where people will mail you the patterns. And I've loved the interactions with folks. Most of my patterns right now are cross-stitch, and that's just, it's the factor of, it's what I can, you know, it's back on the grid. It's what I can do. It's what I can picture and graph, the math side of me, the graph paper and pencil side of me. It's what I can design and it's easiest stage. My very, maybe not the best seller, but certainly high up, has been the canvas work designs that I've started. And I've started that, the two that I have out, and the third one, which working on right now, I particularly did to be beginner canvas work designs. So does not need or require in any way use fancy threads. They are specifically designed to just use DMC floss. There's the way I look at it is that there are plenty of designers out there in the counted canvas work world that do amazing, large, wonderful projects with 10 different threads. Like Debbie Rowley, like these amazing things. And what I think there might need to be a little more of is the people who are not like Christine, who want the little baby step before they jump 10 feet deep into a big project. Or the people who don't have access and, you know, really don't want to, who just want to try something out in a small way. And I have just loved designing those canvas work pieces. And the feedback that I've gotten from folks who have done them is just, especially those who've never done anything like that before, is just what a great opportunity it was to try something like that. So I want to keep expanding. You know, so many people have also commented that I have such variety in my designing style. There's some designers out there, whether they be cross stitch, whether they be counted canvas work, whatever, that have a certain style, and or they have series and whatever. And I don't have a certain style because I'm doing so many different things. And that's okay. That reflects who I am as a stitcher as well. If you were to look at the walls around my home, you would see the variety of stuff that I've stitched over the years, and that's the variety that I like. So my designing work reflects that I really am trying to find all different directions. And I would love to find ways to grow as a designer, to grow in how to get the word out. How do designers do this? Like, I've been trying so hard. Is there some sort of network out there? Is there, you know, and I really want to, you know, when you find something that you're feeling really passionate about, you really want to pursue it. And so this is where I'm really trying to find the ways in my life to, how can I pursue this? Because it's just meant a whole lot to me. And again, a lot of it comes from the positive feedback that I've gotten that has just meant the world, and that really makes a difference. So, absolutely. Yes. Yep. Yep. Yep.
So. All right. We got to stop.
Yeah, we've been chatting for a while here, but I could talk forever with you guys. I really, yep. you guys are like my buddies. You're my friends. I really could talk with you forever.
Well, you got to come back because I had some other questions now pop up. So got to come back.
Okay.
It's the way it is. All right. All right. That's it. Thanks, Arlene, for joining us. Thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.